You might be thinking that the Chicago Cubs are the lovable losers fighting to break a curse on their city this fall. But losing is such a big part of Washington's baseball history that it's cemented in the popular culture.
We've got heart, miles and miles and miles of heart. Oh, it's fine to be a genius, of course, but keep that old horse before the car.
Who minds them pop bottles flying?
The hisses and boos.
The team has been consistent.
Yeah, we always lose.
But we're laughing cause we've got heart. We've got heart.
Oh, yeah. Joining us to explore how the nation's pastime affects the psychology of the nation's capital and what's really at stake in tonight's Washington Nationals game is Fred Frommer. He is the author of You Gotta Have Heart, A History of Washington Baseball from 1859 to the 2012 AL East Champions. He's the founder of the sports business practice at the Dewey Square Group. Fred Frommer, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Baseball may seem like a new thing to a certain generation of Washingtonians. The Nationals have only been here since 2005, but you wrote a few weeks ago that over the long haul, Washington's baseball fans may have suffered even more than those in Chicago who are pulling for the Cubs. Why do you feel that D.C. is a better underdog story?
Well, the last time Washington even made it to the World Series was 1933, which is 12 years before the Cubs did. And the Nationals, also known as the Senators back then, had such a long, long, terrible streak of baseball after they won that 33 pennant. There was a 25-year period, rather, where they only won, had two winning seasons. So it was a long, long haul, and it's been quite a long time since we even had a contender until the Nationals came here.
For those who weren't around Washington when the Senators were still playing here, to what degree was losing a part of that team's identity? A journalist once wrote of Washington, of course, first in war, first in peace, last in the American League.
It was really part of the psychology, unfortunately, of Washington baseball. You had that clip of You Gotta Have Heart, which is the reference to a manager singing to his players in the story in the movie Damn Yankees. And basically the story is Washington Senators fan is so disgusted with his team always losing that he sells his soul to the devil in order to be transformed into a player to lead the Senators to first place over the Yankees. And the manager actually, you know, singing to his players, You Gotta Have Heart. That happens a lot, actually. Managers often sing to their songs, to their players. Little known fact about Washington baseball managers.
Joining us by phone now is Tim Kirkjian. He's a reporter and analyst for ESPN and ESPN's Baseball Tonight. He's the author of several books, including I'm Fascinated by Sacrifice Flies, Inside the Game We All Love. Tim, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Long before you were a widely known baseball analyst, you were a kid growing up here in the Washington area, a diehard Washington Senators fan. How would you describe where that team fit into your life and apparently your family's life as a young person?
Yeah, I loved baseball. I always have. And the Senators were my team. And they were indescribably bad for most of my childhood, other than the 1969 season. But it didn't matter. It doesn't matter when you're 7 or 14 years old and your team stinks. At least you have a major league team. And I can remember many, many times going to RFK Stadium as a kid. It was one of the great highlights of my life. My brother was a ball boy down there a few times because one of his friend's father was the equipment manager. So I go way back with the Washington Senators. And when they left, I literally cried because we didn't have any baseball anymore in my hometown.
You literally cried.
I did. I didn't have much going for me as a kid, I must say. And baseball was an incredibly important part of my life, and it always has been. So we only had one team close to town now, the Orioles, and they just didn't give me what the Nationals gave me or the Senators. That was a hometown team.
Fred Frommer, why do you think Washington has gone so long without a title or even making it to the World Series stage? You know that baseball fans in Washington do not have a curse of the Bambino or anything legendary like that to blame for our championship drought, Fred.
That's true, although I do have a theory that's maybe like a mini curse, which is in 1934. The Senators' owner sold off his star player-manager, Joe Cronin, a year after Cronin had led the team to that last pennant. And making matters worse, Cronin actually had married Griffith's niece, the owner's niece. So I think that kind of angered the baseball gods. But on a more substantive level, Clark Griffith, the owner of the Senators for much of the 20th century, was an anachronism back then. He was a guy that really relied on the team to generate revenue. Other owners were richer and could afford to plow money in from their independent sources of wealth. And so he really didn't have the money to build a good minor league system, et cetera. And so the team suffered as a result. And when that happened, less people came to the games because the team was bad. Again, less money for the team, a vicious cycle that ended with that first team moving to Minnesota in 1961.
If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send email to kojawmu.org. How do you think sports shape local culture here in Washington? You can also shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show. Tim, to what degree do you think the transient nature of Washington has kept some of that culture that exists in other cities, that defines other fan bases, and from taking root here?
I think it's definitely a big factor. I mean, when the Nationals came back here in 2005, I really believe that all fans would, like, drop the Orioles and go to the Nationals, much like I thought everyone grew up like I did, that they were here when, you know, the Senators left. And that simply isn't the case. There are so many people that live in this area now who don't even know who the Senators are, perhaps because they're too young. But even there are just so many people have left and come back that they don't understand the history of the Senators, who they were, when they left, and everything else. And that's why I think we have this situation here.
This question for both of you, I'll start with you, Fred. The Nationals have been in Washington for more than a decade. How would you say the city's culture as a fan base has evolved over that period of time? They've been winning a lot during the past 5 years, but there's also a certain football team that tends to dominate the area's attention.
Yeah, it's still a football town, I think, unfortunately. I think the Nationals are closing in, and maybe in a few decades we can be a baseball town. But yeah, it's you know, baseball is taking root here. You know, the attendance has been pretty good, certainly far better than it was in the 60s and the 50s when Washington was a much smaller market. And Tim can talk about that. It's a different, totally different region now, much, much bigger fan base, much bigger population. But it, you know, as you referenced, it's just not really the number one sport in D.C. quite yet.
Why is this, Tim?
Well, I think the Redskins' hold is just what it is and has been for so long. And this isn't the only city like this. Let's not forget that Cleveland Indians are now in the American League Championship Series, and the Browns are much bigger in Cleveland, the terrible Browns, than the Indians are. This happens in other towns, too, even in Baltimore, as the Orioles made the playoffs this year and were a very dynamic team most of the year. They didn't draw very well, especially down the stretch. The Ravens have taken over to some degree in that town, but not like in Washington, where the Redskins have been kings for a long time.
Fred, some Nationals fans have been grumbling this year about how bars and restaurants here often don't bother to even put national games on TV. What's been your experience with this, and how do you account for it?
Well, I didn't know that. Is that when there are Redskins games on, or just in general?
In general, oh. as a frequenter of these establishments, I have observed this.
That's surprising to me. I mean, maybe you got to find better bars to go to. But I
routinely tell them to turn to the game. Then they have trouble finding it.
Well, that's another issue. Yeah, I mean, that is surprising to me. I know, especially this team has been really good. They had a great season, and they've been a contender in the last 5 years. And you know, it's funny, just getting to the point about the old Senators. I think some of the newer fans are a bit spoiled. You know, when the team gets knocked out in the first round, or maybe doesn't make the playoffs, people are just so angry. And you talk to the old-time Senators fans. I don't know, Tim, if I put you in this category, you can answer. But a lot of those fans say, we're just happy to have a team. You know, even if they're a losing team, we're just happy to have a team. So they don't take it quite as hard as some of the newer fans who maybe got a little spoiled by the success we've had over the last 5 years.
Tim, the newer fans, we're looking for instant gratification?
Yeah, well, I think that's how it works in society now. It certainly is how it works in the sports world, and not just here in Washington, but everywhere. You got to win. You got to win now, and you got to give me what I want right now. That's just how it operates. But I think Fred is right. I think I know for years I would tell people, look, I'd much rather have a terrible team than no team at all. And I think some Washingtonians are just so happy that we have a team again that it's okay that they don't win a championship. Hey, they were really good in 2012 and 2014, but eventually it's going to get to the point where it's really time to win. Because as Fred said, 1933, 1924, that was a long time ago. And by the way, I went to Walter Johnson High School in Bethesda, Maryland, named after not just the greatest senator ever, but the greatest pitcher ever. And so my connection is a little deeper than, say, a lot of other fans around here.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation on baseball in Washington. Do you think D.C. sports franchises are cursed? What do you think is at stake in the Nationals playoff game tonight? Give us a call, 800-433-8850, or you can go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're talking baseball in Washington in anticipation of tonight's playoff game with Tim Kirkjian. He is a reporter and analyst for ESPN and ESPN's Baseball Tonight, author of several books, including I'm Fascinated by Sacrifice Flies, Inside the Game We All Love. He joins us by phone. Joining me in studio is Fred Frommer. He's the author of You Gotta Have Heart, A History of Washington Baseball from 1859 to the 2012 AL East Champions. He's the founder of the sports business practice at the Dewey Square Group. We're inviting your calls at 800-433-8850. Let's go to Rocco in Washington. Rocco, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I have a thought on why we haven't received our due here for the amount of suffering that we've endured as baseball fans. And I think it's that for that 34-year period when we didn't have a team, I think it was almost totally forgotten, including by a lot of people here, that we had ever had baseball in Washington. At the same time, the Orioles succeeded in marketing the idea that Washington was naturally part of their territory and always had been. So there was just this idea, as I say, that Washington was not a baseball place. This all sort of coincided with the period when this idea of curses originated. You know, the curse of the Bambino didn't actually come into existence until after the 1986 World Series, the so-called Buckner game, when George Vesey of the New York Times columnist originated it. And so it's during this period when the whole idea of baseball curses is coming into existence, Washington is just not even on anybody's radar. So I think that's maybe the major reason, you know, we don't get our due.
Tim Kirkjian, you mentioned earlier about the years during which the team left and how its leaving affected you and the fact that a lot of D.C. natives became fans of the Orioles. Tim, how would you compare the baseball culture in Baltimore to what's been growing up in D.C. for the past decade or so?
Well, the culture in Baltimore is different because their team didn't leave for 34 years, and their team was exceptional for about a 20-year period there, which was just amazing. 1966, at least, through 1983, the Orioles, for the most part, were a tremendous team. And they're different. Their culture is completely different. But what I find interesting now is, on my street here in Gaithersburg, we have Nationals fans on one house, Orioles fans in the next house, and the house after that we have Orioles and Nationals fans. So there's not that hatred of between the two teams as there is in certain places in New York where you either love the Mets or you love the Yankees and you hate the other one.
Fred, what Tim seems to be describing is an emerging baseball culture in Washington that ultimately may encompass both teams.
Yeah, that could be. You know, I want to talk about the Orioles a bit and their history here. Before they were the Orioles, they were the old St. Louis Browns. And back in the 50s and, you know, the early 50s and the late 40s, you know, the Senators really had kind of a dance partner at the bottom of the standings. That was the St. Louis Browns. So at least they had some company. Misery loves company, of course. When the Browns moved to Baltimore and renamed the Orioles, very quickly they became a competitive team. So not only did Washington now have to share its market with the Orioles, but they also didn't have the sad sack team at the bottom of the standings. They really had last place for the most part all to themselves for many years.
Here's Karen in Washington, D.C. Karen, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. This is my first time calling into you, Kojo, but I love your show.
Thank you.
And I'm a native Washingtonian who went to Griffith Stadium to see the Senators. So I, like your other commentator, am thrilled just to have a ball game, a ball team in this town. And I'm also thrilled to have seen over years, it used to be there'd be more, as many people in the stadium wearing the opposition teams as the Nats, because we have so many people from other cities. And now you don't see that. You see a sea of red. But I also feel that our major newspaper still continues to give much more prominence to mediocre football games than to baseball games. So that's my comment.
And Karen obviously feels that ought to change. Karen, thank you very much for your call. Speaking of the Nats fans, we got a tweet from Stephen who says, Nats fans are too quiet. Two strikes and the crowd sits on its hands. Not enough noise. How do you feel about that, Tim?
well, I'm sure there's something to that. I'm in the other school on this, that I think it's up to the players to play really well, and then the fans will react. I don't think it's the fans' duty to make the players play better by cheering louder all the time. Now, is it important when you hit a walk-off homer to get that reception from the crowd? Of course it is. But I don't think it's the fans' duty to spur on the home team. I think it's the home team's duty to play really well and get the fans to show up and to cheer. But to that end, the Nationals have been pretty darn good for the last few years. And, yes, maybe there should be a little bit more noise, not just at Nationals Park, but at a lot of ballparks across America.
If the fans have a duty, maybe we should get paid. Fred, what would winning a postseason series mean for the baseball culture here in Washington? Do you think it would change anything?
Definitely. I mean, not only has Washington not won a World Series since 1924, but they haven't won a postseason series of any kind since 1924. You know, back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, there really was just the World Series. You didn't have playoffs. But even taking that into account, obviously the Nationals have lost two series in recent years. And so there is a built-up frustration. And I think if they can get over the top and beat the Dodgers tonight, even if they lose to the Cubs, who seems to be maybe the team of destiny this year, although I hope not, I still think that would be a huge hurdle to get over for this town in general.
What do you think, Tim?
Well, I'm with Fred. I mean, you look at the tortured Cubs fans, and we understand 1908, how long ago that's been. But the Cubs have been to the playoffs a bunch of times. They have some playoff history. They've won some playoff games and series. It's the Nationals haven't won, as Fred just said, anything since Walter Johnson, you know, pitched four innings of relief to win Game 7 in 1924. That's the last time they won a postseason series. So the torture here is significant, to say the least.
Here's Charles in Washington, D.C. Speaking of issues between teams, Charles, your turn.
Hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to say that one big reason it's hard to find Nationals games on television is because the Orioles control the cable casting rights to Nationals baseball games. I'm the author of the book Lawyer Ball, all about the lawsuit between the Orioles and the Nationals and MLB that's going on in New York City for the last couple of years, and it's still going on.
That I have trouble keeping track of, yes.
Well, you'll have plenty of time because it's not going to end anytime soon. And someday I hope to come on and talk about it on your show when it eventually does. But hello to Fred. Thank you for your blurb on my book.
Oh, great to hear from you.
Hopefully we'll still both be alive when it's finally settled. We got this email from Carol Ann. What are y'all talking about? The Brooklyn Dodgers weren't called the bums for nothing. My family and all our neighbors and friends suffered from the years of the bums winning and losing. Yes, they were in the World Series in the 50s against the Yankees of all great teams, but the ups and downs of their record would make us crazy. Well, I guess she's telling us welcome to the club. Here now is Shane in Annapolis, Maryland. Shane, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for taking this call. Appreciate it. And great to talk to you, Tim. I got to say, you're my favorite baseball commentator. So here's the thing. I'm originally from New York. I'm a Yankee fan, so I'm an actual baseball fan. Sorry if that insults anybody who might be listening that's a Nats fan. I've been down here for about 7 or 8 years now, gone to a lot of Nats games, sort of adopted the Nationals just because I love going to baseball games, frankly, and I don't like living without the sport in my sort of home city, home area. One thing that is so prevalent at Nats games is the sort of, you know, political culture around town, the corporate culture. So many folks that are there, you know, night in, night out during the season are sort of, you know, there to be seen, to go to a Nats game. And there's just not that much of an interest. You know, you've got political folks around town taking clients and such. I wonder, Tim, what you think of that and whether or not, because from my perspective, that impacts growing the fan base when I see so many folks at, you know, your average Nats game, you know, middle of the season that frankly aren't there to even watch baseball.
Tim? Well, that's an interesting point, and thanks for your nice words. But I'm not in the stands. I'm not divorcing myself from this, but you see this better than I do. I watch games from the press box, and I don't see that give and take that you're talking about. But I'm sure there's quite a bit to that, just like there's something to, not to change the subject, in Baltimore with the more corporate fan base that goes to the Oriole games at the new ballpark, which is now 20-plus years old. I just know how big a difference there was from old Memorial Stadium.
Yep.
To new Camden Yards. It's a significant change, and I'm sure the same thing has happened to some degree in Washington.
Well, we're running out of time, Fred, but how do brushes with failure shape a fan base? It seems to be a collective experience when you suffer something like the 18-inning playoff loss to the San Francisco Giants in 2014 or the St. Louis Cardinals loss in 2012. But Boston fans, Chicago Cup fans, those fans went through decades of that kind of pain together.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's going to be too much to – I don't think it's too much of a burden at this point, those two playoff losses. You know, if you take the grand sweep of thing, which I did in that Washington Post piece, obviously there's a longer tortured history. But for most fans, you know, they're not really connecting with those old teams because they're that long 33-year gap. So, you know, if they lose tonight and then maybe if they get bounced out of the playoffs in the first round next year, then we can start talking about kind of an abused fan base. But at this point, you know, I think that they've had good teams and a couple of playoff losses really doesn't define a franchise.
Fred Frommer, he is the author of You Gotta Have Heart, A History of Washington Baseball from 1859 to the 2012 AL East Champions. He's the founder of the sports business practice at the Dewey Square Group. Thank you for joining us, Fred.
Thank you. Great talk.
And Tim Kirkjian is a reporter and analyst for ESPN and ESPN's Baseball Tonight. He's the author of several books, including I'm Fascinated by Sacrifice Flies, Inside the Game We All Love. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That's it for the show today. But if you're still trying to wrap your head around Bob Dylan winning the Nobel Prize for Literature, head to kojoshow.org/blog. In our archives, you'll find a post from October of last year outlining everything you need to know about every major literary prize. It's book award season again as we await word on a slew of other prizes. So check it out and outsmart everyone at your next cocktail party. And for more fuel on that front, be sure to meet us back here tomorrow at noon for the Politics Hour. We'll talk with Maryland's Green Party candidate for the U.S. Senate, Margaret Flowers. That's coming up tomorrow at noon on the Politics Hour. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nam.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schrobsdorf, Caleb Burney, Ruth Tam, and Avery Kleinman. The engineer is Beck Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.